Good morning. Welcome to Ideas and Issues. I'm your host, Hugh LaFollette. On the show this week, I'll be talking with Michael West, Professor of Organizational Psychology at the Aston Business School in Birmingham, England, and our topic will be worker satisfaction. Michael, glad to have you on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
All right, let's begin. If you could just give the listener a brief sense or definition of what you mean by worker satisfaction.
Well, I guess it's, how satisfied people are in their work and with the physical working conditions, with issues like pay, promotion, with relationships with fellow workers, with their supervisors. And it's the accumulation of really all of the important aspects of their work and how that affects their sense of well-being and their sense of fulfillment as human beings in the workplace.
Okay, when you say they're how they feel about all these things, is this primarily determined by self-reports? Do you give out questionnaires, that sort of thing?
Yes, we do. We give out questionnaires and we ask people to give a rating of things like how satisfied they are with their, their fellow workers, with the freedom to do the work in their own way, the amount of variety they have in their jobs, for example, and the hours of work and so on. But we also know that the responses that people make to these questionnaires actually predict the extent to which they're likely to leave their jobs. So although in one sense they're just kind of subjective judgments, we know that they're related also to how people subsequently behave in terms of leaving the organization and moving on to another job.
Okay, so there's some sort of validation of the questionnaire in terms of the behavior of the employee.
That's absolutely right, and it also relates to other aspects of the work. There is some relationship, although rather a weak one, between people's satisfaction and how hard they work on the job as well.
Oh, okay. Well, you mentioned some of the sorts of questions you ask. How do you, in your studies, what do you find as being the primary factors that lead to a job's being satisfying?
Well, the kinds of things that really seem to matter to people in terms of satisfaction are, I guess in some ways it's a little bit surprising. It's not necessarily pay that comes out as being really important. People are very concerned about relationships with their fellow workers. That matters a lot to us, I think, in the workplace, our sense of belonging and the sense of fulfillment that we get from relationships with those around us. Also, the freedom people have to choose the way that they do their work is really important and is a significant source of satisfaction. People like to feel that they have some control over how they do their work and some sense of autonomy or freedom, if you like. Relationships with their immediate bosses matter a lot. You know, are their relationships mutually respectful? Is there a sense of mutual support in the relationship, and is it free from lots of, you know, conflict? That seems to be important. And the amount of variety in their jobs, and we see typically huge variation in the amount of variety people have in their work. In many shop floor manufacturing jobs on the factory floor, we see people performing jobs that take just a minute to complete. So they're doing the same job 60 times an hour and, you know, nearly 500 times a day and 2,000 times a week and so on. And that can be enormously damaging. So the amount of variety that people have in their jobs is an important predictor of satisfaction at work.
All right, let me ask you just a couple of follow-up questions about several of those, which I think are especially interesting. One, you mentioned the freedom and control a person has in the job. Could you give some specific examples, the kinds of freedoms that individual want, appreciate, and I suppose then conversely, the kind of restrictions they dislike?
Yeah, well, it's from the kind of mundane, if you like, from when people take coffee breaks or, rest breaks from their work, when they take them and how long they take them for, something as mundane as that, right up to setting objectives for their work. You know, if it's a nurse working in a hospital ward, the extent to which she's able to discuss with her supervisor or his supervisor the kind of objectives for the work and the control they have over that. And that seems to be important because human beings generally like to have some sense of control in their environment and freedom to make decisions about how their jobs are done. I mean, one of the interesting things we know about employee involvement or participation is that most employees don't want to get involved in influencing the strategic direction of their companies, but what they do want to do is to influence their immediate work environment, you know, how the technology is laid out or the nature of the office layout, how they do their jobs and the time that they have to take rests and so on.
Okay, in fact, it seems to me, too, that's going to be related to another one you mentioned, the idea that they are being supported and respected by their supervisors. Because one of the ways in which you show respect is being willing to listen to and take the opinion of the worker as being very important.
That's absolutely right. That's an important source of satisfaction and also, I think, an important way of building a sense of community in an organization that in our research in, well, over the last 15 years, we've been trying to determine what factors really influence the performance of organizations, and one of them is whether there's a culture within which people who work in the organization feel respected and valued and listened to. And in many organizations, that's clearly not the case, that the people who are, if you like, the lower-level employees are simply treated as just more resources within the organization, like a piece of technology. For me, one of the really interesting things about visiting different organizations is the amount of respect that's given to the workers, the employees in situations. I remember one day going to two different organizations. In the morning, I visited an organization where I was shown around the factory floor, and the sense of mutual respect and engagement and the strength of discussion between the managers and the employees was tangible. And, you know, they were on first-name terms and discussing issues to do with the work. And in the second organization, it was run very much as a kind of traditional, if you like, assembly line factory. And as I was shown around the factory floor, the people who were using the technology were sitting next to it, but were ignored by the manager who was explaining the technology to me. So there was no sense of engagement and involvement and, if you like, real human relationship.
Well, now, very quickly, you mentioned the sorts of things that make a job satisfying. Are there additional factors that may make a job dissatisfying?
Well, we found that, of course, things like pay matter a lot, and the physical working conditions, what sometimes has been called hygiene factors, that the physical working conditions are poor, people get very dissatisfied. So one of the companies that we went to was making advanced plastics, fiberglass coatings for and resins coatings for yachts and so on, with lots of dirty material all around the floor, and it was a significant source of dissatisfaction for the workers there. And those kinds of factors, like pay, like the physical working conditions, are the sorts of issues which I think cause people a lot of dissatisfaction. Not so much satisfaction as dissatisfaction.
Okay. A moment ago when you were talking about the overall nature of your research, you said that one of the things you were doing was looking at productivity of companies. What's the relationship, or is there a relationship, between worker satisfaction and productivity?
Well, it's there is and there isn't, if you like. What we know from many studies over the years is that the relationship between how satisfied an individual worker is and his or her performance is positive, but actually pretty weak. For statisticians among your listeners, the correlation is about 0.2. It's actually a very low correlation. What it means is that there are lots of people out there in the workforce who are very happy in their work, but they're actually not doing a very good job. And we also know that there are many people out there who are very unhappy in their work, but probably working very effectively. I think I see lots in the health service in the United Kingdom where people are under incredible pressure, but they do a very good job. But because of the pressure they're under, they feel very unhappy at work. However, when we look at employee satisfaction as a whole in a company and relate it to company performance rather than to the individual's job performance, then we find actually quite sizable and strong relationships that we find that knowing the average satisfaction level at one point in time enables us to pretty accurately predict the productivity of a company about 18 months later. And we think the reason is that when you have an organization where people generally feel positive, they feel good in their work, there's a sense of positive and strong morale, that people just become more cooperative and work that bit harder and do the extra things in the workplace that's not necessarily part of their job, and that those things all combined lead up to better performance of the company as a whole.
Okay, actually, I want to follow up a little bit about the particular correlations, but let me go back one second. You said that there is a strong correlation when you look at job satisfaction as a whole in company performance.
That's right.
Trying to get a sense relative to other things, just how important is it? For example, are there other factors that singularly are more important in determining company success and productivity?
Well, for example, if we look at factors like company strategy, our finding is that that explains about 1 or 2% of the variation between companies in their productivity. If we look at, the nature of the technology they have and how sophisticated that is, again, it only explains about 1 or 2%. When we look at research and development, R&D, that explains about 6%. And we find that we can explain somewhere in the region of 25% of the variation between companies in their performance on the basis of a knowledge of the average satisfaction level of employees. So you can see that actually this is a very important finding in terms of the amount of variation in performance that it explains. I mean, if we could manipulate satisfaction and increase company performance by 25% across the whole nation, you can see it's a really big effect.
Okay, and now let's go back and talk a little bit more about why you think it has such a large effect. I mean, you said some things a moment ago. Maybe you'd like to say just some more general comments about why you think job satisfaction of the company as a whole seems to be so important.
Well, when people go to work, they go to do their job, but that's not all that they do. They do things outside of their immediate job, which help the workplace run effectively. It's what sometimes people call contextual performance. So you have job performance, the way they do their jobs, and you have contextual performance, what they do in addition to their jobs. So, you know, they may be asked for help by somebody in another department, and how cooperative they are in responding to that request for help is one aspect of contextual performance. You know, you may be, for example, walking through the reception area of your organization and you notice that there's an external visitor waiting to be attended to, but there's nobody on reception. So you go up and you say, "Oh, can I help you?" Again, it's not part of your job, but it's something you do maybe because you feel positive about the organization, that you behave as a good organizational citizen, if you like. When I finished university, I was pretty down in terms of my bank draft, and I worked in a coal mine. And the guy I worked with would occasionally pick up a piece of coal from the floor and pop it on the conveyor belt. It was a pretty meaningless gesture because hundreds of thousands of tons were going out of the colliery every day. But it was his bit for the organization because he had a very positive view of it. If you take all of those little acts of cooperation and citizenship and additional help and all those acts that are not part of your job requirements and add them up, that may be what makes the difference between organizations which are highly successful and those which are only moderately successful. And we know from studies in psychology that when people feel good, when they're satisfied, when they're feeling positive, they behave more cooperatively, generally, with each other. That's what we human beings do. If we feel good, we're more likely to be cooperative and creative. So we think it's those sorts of factors which really explain this extraordinary finding.
Okay, I mean, I realize this probably oversimplifies it, but at least it sounds to me an important part of what you're saying is that a company is not made up just of discrete individuals, but it's a team. And
that's
how
right.
The team performs is what really determines the output of the company, not how each individual performs. And how the team performs is importantly affected by job satisfaction.
That's right, that's right. When people are generally feeling good, they're more likely to cooperate, they're more likely to manage conflict better, they're more likely to be helpful with each other, And as you say, all of that adds up to a kind of form of organizational teamwork, if you like. And they're also more likely to be positive about innovation, the ideas that those around them have for improving the way the work can be done. They're more likely to be open to suggestions for change from people in the organization. And those things, as you say, all do add up to teamworking, to cooperation. And if you go back to, you know, us human beings when we were on the savannah running around, it was probably very much the same, where you had a group of people who felt that they belonged and felt positive in their social group. They were more likely to cooperate effectively, more likely to catch the wildebeest and share the food and build a sense of belonging and community. I think the same still applies today in modern organizations. And really the message is that if modern organizations want to be effective, then it really is enormously important that they focus on the satisfaction and the well-being of the people who work within them.
I want to pursue these themes in the second half of the show. I'd like to pause, though, for a moment for the benefit of those who've tuned in late. This is Ideas and Issues. My guest today is Michael West, Professor of Organizational Psychology at Aston Business School in the United Kingdom. And our topic is worker satisfaction. I'm wondering if we can now take this from the abstract and make it a bit more concrete. I wonder if you could give us an example of a company that you think is an especially good example of one that encourages and promotes the satisfaction of its workers, and then talk about the way in which that influences productivity.
Okay, well, there's fortunately we see quite a few companies where these things go well. I'm afraid we also see companies where individual human needs are pretty much ignored. But two companies spring to mind. One is Zotefoams, which is a British manufacturing company, and another is Raychem, which is an American company which has places in the United Kingdom as well. Zotefoams enjoys amongst the highest profits and productivity of all of the companies taking part in our research over the years. It's also very enlightened in how it treats its employees. It's very concerned with having a skilled and motivated and flexible workforce, and they have built teamwork very extensively within the organization, which is one of the factors that we find repeatedly is associated with high levels of productivity, extensive team-based working. And incidentally, the more team-based working there is in these organizations, as in Zotefoam, generally the more satisfied and the less stressed employees are. And Zotefoam tries to encourage know-how and to build a knowledge base right down to the lowest levels of the organization. And they encourage employees to identify problems in their work and generate their own solutions. So most of their workforce have had training in group problem-solving skills. And as a result, there are fewer issues which need to be to be taken care of by management. And training is almost, if you like, central to the company's people management strategy. All shop floor employees, supervisors, managers have a significant amount of training every year. And the company pays its staff above the average rate for the industry. And it promotes a sense of community by trying to break down the boundaries between management and non-management. So there's a single salary structure for everybody. Employees have share options, and there's profit sharing, and the percentage is the same for all of the people who work within the organization. So there's no bias in favor of senior managers. Raychem is, as I mentioned, another company which has a very enlightened approach. Again, huge emphasis on training, a lot of team-based working in the organization. When we visited a couple of years ago, every employee was receiving 5 days of training in teamwork every year. There were schemes to encourage family involvement. They had a big area for children's parties outside the organization and a sports center and so on. So there's a real commitment to the people within these organizations and to building a real sense of community.
I suppose the main thing I'd like to talk about, you sort of hinted at it earlier, and you might even want to use the example of these companies to help illustrate it, is what can we learn from these studies? I mean, it seems to me that it's not just a bit of academic work that has no bearing on individual choices or on companies' choices. but in fact could be very important in guiding a worker's thinking about where she or he wants to work, and in guiding management in deciding how they're going to organize their company. Maybe we could divide those. I mean, someone's looking for a job. What do your studies tell them to look for and what to avoid? Because there is a tendency to say, well, I'm going to go where they're going to pay me the most.
Yeah. Well, as I've indicated earlier, pay is not the principal sort of source of satisfaction for people. Of course, it's why we go to work. And of course, we need to have a reasonable level of pay. But people are motivated by probably three other really important factors. One is a need for autonomy and control. So you really do want to be in a job where you can have some influence over how it's done. I mean, we know that the people who are most stressed at work are those who have jobs where they have very high work demands but low control, mostly assembly line workers. It's not the executives who get stressed. So people need to look for jobs where their needs for control and autonomy can be met, where they have a reasonably high degree of freedom in how they do their work. And that's really encouraged by the organization. And that's something you can check out in the organization when you go. To what extent does the job give me the freedom to do it in my own way? And a second really important motivation is the need that people have for growth and development and competency. People really need to have opportunities to learn new skills, to feel that they're making progress, and to express their creativity at work. Actually, we've found that when people move to jobs where they have fewer opportunities for growth and development, that's often even more stressful for them than losing their jobs altogether. So it's about seeing whether there are opportunities for learning in the organization, how much commitment there is to training and skill development within the organization. And the third factor, in addition to need for material well-being or good pay, in addition to the need for control and autonomy, and in addition to the need for growth and development, is the need to belong. That human beings are fundamentally social animals. We have a profound need to belong in our families and our groups, wherever. And organizations can either feed or starve that need for belonging. So one of the things to look for, and it's worth meeting other people within the organization, other workers within the organization, and asking them how they feel about the place, is there a sense of belonging? Is there a sense that people are valued? Is there a sense that they're respected? Is there a sense that they're treated as human beings, not just as resources? And one of the things I would always recommend is, as I say, if you go into an organization and you're thinking of joining it, try to get to meet with 7 or 8 other people and ask them what they experience about the organization, how satisfied they are, and how respected and involved they feel in the organization.
Now, how would we turn this toward what a company should do? Someone's thinking about either thinking about starting a company or has a company and they're not satisfied with the way it's going.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's from our research, there are, two overarching factors which are really important. The first is that people in organizations need to know what it is they're required to do. They need to be clear about their roles and their objectives. It's a major mistake to think, well, if we just treat everybody really nicely and are positive with them and build teams, the rest will follow. Actually, individuals and teams need to be very clear about what their objectives are at work and what their roles are. And then the second really important factor is this sense of belonging, of respect, that people need to feel valued at work, and that if you can build an organization where people generally feel valued by each other and valued by senior management in the organization, respected and listened to, then those two factors together can contribute enormously to the effectiveness of the organization as well as to the quality of life of people at work. It also means designing the jobs that people do in ways which make them varied in terms of their content, that they're not simply doing dull, monotonous, tiring, almost torturous bits of assembly line work, but there is some variation which can be achieved via job rotation or by just creative design of work, so that people really do have an opportunity to use their skills, to develop new skills, to be creative in the way that they do their work. And also for the organization to support and nurture innovation and ideas for new and improved ways of working throughout the organization is another really important, I think, message that managers need to take a hold of, because organizations have to adapt in order to survive in this highly competitive era of globalization. That means drawing on the innovativeness of all of the employees. The end result of that is the organization can be more successful, and the employees who feel involved and feel they're making a contribution will be more satisfied as well.
Well, okay. In the last 2.5 minutes, I'm wondering if you could help us, if you could maybe speculate on something. When I read the sorts of studies that you've done, when I hear you talk about the results, part of my response is that just seems so obvious. Why don't companies do it? I mean, what's the problem here? Why don't companies, organizations, bureaucracies, universities, governmental agencies do this?
Well, I think the reasons are complex, and there are a number of reasons. I came across a study recently which looked at senior managers' identification of problems in their organization, and it was interesting that the people between 25 and 35, these managers were all saying the major problems facing them were technological problems, and between about 35 and 45, they were saying the major problems were strategic ones, and it was between 45 and, well, it was 45 and upwards. Those were the ones who said the major problems in the organization were people management problems, and there may be something about wisdom and maturity that leads you to recognize that really what organizations are is they're not technologies, they're not strategies. Ultimately, they are collections of human beings. But the fact is that technology and strategy are much easier to deal with, I think. It's actually less effort to think about dealing with technology and strategy. You know, technology is pretty straightforward and we can control it pretty easily, and strategy is something we can make up in our heads and keep revising, or we can change the structure of the organization. But dealing with people and dealing with relationships, I think, is trickier. It's more ambiguous, it's more uncertain. And I think what many managers do is make the mistake of, if you like, going for the easy hits and managing the technology or the structure or the finances or the strategy of the organization, rather than dealing with what are the really difficult issues and the more complex issues and the more uncertain issues which revolve around people. That's one explanation, I think, and it may be that as managers become more experienced, they recognize that actually they can achieve most effect, as our research shows, through dealing with people issues first, not last. I was struck, I must say, when we went back to these organizations, how many managers said, well, we know that what you found out is right, but we want to get the business functioning well first. And we said, but it is the business. People are the business. That's the whole point. And they found it really difficult to grasp that. And I guess the second point is that organizations have got too big to be good communities. It becomes very hard to manage relationships when you have an organization of 5,000 or 6,000 people. The community breaks down, which is why I think the introduction of team-based working is proving so effective in organizations, because it creates smaller, more focused, more human, more intimate communities, sub-communities, if you like, within the organization.
Well, I hate to say it, we're out of time. I really appreciate your being on the show today.
Well, I've enjoyed talking with you. It's been a pleasure.
I've been speaking today with Michael West, Professor of Organizational Psychology at the Aston Business School in Birmingham, England. This is Hugh LaFollette, Friday's Issues. Good day.